You are listening to The Weekend Chapter on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.
Thank you so much for staying with us right here on Adventist World Radio, powered by the SID Media. It is still The Weekend Chapter with yours truly. My name is Marvin Makichi, and right now we are getting straight into our interview for the day. And tonight it's a very, very interesting one. I've got the man Admiral Ncube on the line. So you probably have seen some of his posts on social media. Very interesting, I must say. And I decided to sit the man down and find out, a bit of, let me say a bit more about himself and the kind of stuff that he usually puts out on social media. Let's get to hear from the horse's mouth, so to say. So let me take this opportunity to welcome the brother, Elder Ncube himself. So, Elder, of course, the thing is this, I've only known you through social media, and you know how it is on social media. Sometimes I even get to wonder, is Admiral Ncube his real name, or maybe it's just a social media name? So who's this guy, Admiral Ncube? Tell us a bit more about yourself, you know, and pretty much also your journey in faith. I'm sure I would also want to hear about that.
Yeah, maybe to put it in simple ways, I'm a Zimbabwean, but I was born in Zambia. I would say I grew up in the church. Of course, my family or my parents were not really active Adventists, but we were there, right, around the pulpit. So I then decided to get baptized probably in my teens. But my journey or my decision to get baptized was really, you've progressed in terms of age. You see your peers, then you are like, all right, let me join the others so that I can fit in into the other rituals of the church. But it was later that I started investigating, got friends into high school, university. That's when I started discovering Jesus for myself, and gradually, I would say, made a decision to commit myself to him. So it's, I would say, I've evolved over the years to be where I am today. I'm a father, three boys, married. My base is Botswana, but I've been in different parts of the world, from Southeast Asia, South Asia, Middle East, East and Southern Africa, with my kind of work. Yeah, but I'm an Adventist in good and regular standing.
Wow. That's beautiful. That's good to know right there. So you have been in different parts of the world, like you said, and of course I get to wonder, you know, with this kind of stuff that you put in, having traveled so much, what do you think is the main difference between, let's say, Adventism in Zimbabwe? You've also been to Zambia, you've stayed in Botswana and things like that. What's the difference, let me say, are there any differences that you've noted between the different countries and the different cultures?
Marvin, interesting enough, I would respond to that question by saying, I think being a Zimbabwean, I've realized that Adventism or the Adventist Church is not Zimbabwean. Or as a Zimbabwean, I'm not the best expression of what it is to be an Adventist. I celebrate the diversity within the church. I've seen expressions that run different from my culture or my way of doing things that I grew up with, you know. On one side, you get to contexts where there's an element of being conservative, traditional, being careful over certain things. Then you go to an extreme where you see, not an extreme, but a side where you see there's a bit of flexibility, openness to engage and explore aspects of the Christian faith that are outside Adventism. So it's really like a pendulum. Adventism in Europe, in Asia, in Southern Africa, in the Middle East, there are differences. As much as we try to be one global homogeneous entity, but I think our cultures cannot be denied in all this. So I think a take home for me there is, I've realized that I always joke with others, in this part of the world, Southern Africa, Zimbabwe, Zambia, etc., we tend to be more conservative, more of us tend to be more conservative than the others. So there are differences in expressions, which I've noticed. But there are questions, of course, around that. Yeah, let me put that politely.
Okay. So we are more conservative this side. And I realize that usually we fight over a lot of things, dressing, music, and the like. And I remember there's a statement that usually comes out. A lot of people say that it's more like somebody who takes a loaf of bread and eats the plastic as well, so to say. And they say that maybe, just maybe, we embrace too much of the European culture and forgetting the word itself. What's your take on that?
Understandably, when the gospel comes, or when it goes dressed in the culture of the messenger. That will happen even today. If I am to take the gospel to another part of the world, you cannot take my Zimbabwe-ness out of it, right? So I'll carry it, I'll express it probably in a language that I would know better, in a culture that I would know better. So I totally agree with that. When the missionaries came, sincere as they were, they could only export what they knew. And they could only be suspicious and reject what they were not sure of, instead of exploring and understanding the how Africans or other races are spiritual, how does that relate to them being Christians or Adventists? They did a good job in erasing certain aspects of that culture, and then they sold that erosion as gospel. So we saw the things that we let go. We thought, oh, so that's what the gospel is all about, letting go of certain things. That's what the gospel is all about, sacrificing certain things. So we then associated the gospel or being Christians with letting go of certain things. And probably we forgot really to ask within ourselves that, okay, so what are we holding on to here? You know. I totally agree that that's the greatest mistake. And we are trying to recover from that. And unfortunately, if you then look at the state of Adventism today, you find that in the North, Europe, North America, etc., in the West rather, they have become more progressive, I would say more liberal, but we are still more conservative over certain things that they introduced them to us. And it's like they left us somewhere else and they moved elsewhere. So we are holding on to something and we are saying, oh, but we thought what you left us with is the real thing. But they seem to have let go of it. So we haven't really discussed, they haven't really come back to us and say, look, guys, I think the things that we spoke about the other time, we need to relook at them. We need to relax a bit. But they've left us. So we end up then being into this turf war where we fight over, I would say, what, trivial issues or issues that more external, you know. And I say external because there are reports that have been written by the church on the state of, I'll call it the state of Adventism, a survey on global membership, where they will say in the global South, people tend to be more legalistic, conservative, associating salvation with the things that they do for God. Those are not my words.
Interesting. But now, if you look at church, let's say the Adventist church in general, Mr. Nguye, we have that theme, give me that old-time religion. It's good enough for me. And I'm sure there's a biblical verse that is usually quoted, consider the ways of the old. Okay, in Shona, that says, nzira dzikari, tedzerai nzira dzikari, you know. And now, how do you view that? Because we are, give me that old-time religion. So are we supposed to follow the West or... Let's just get the old-time religion and stick with it.
That's an interesting question. I always hear it in so many places. But if you look at it closely, the so-called people who came up with the old-time religion were progressive for our day, for their day. If you look at the Adventist pioneers, right? If you look at the history of Adventism, you're going to realize that those young men and women around the 18th, 19th century were bold. They were progressive for that time. They questioned, they challenged the status quo, and they gave birth to us today. So I don't know, when we say old-time religion, where do we want to begin it? Are we going to Eden? Are we going to our pioneers? Are we going to the Middle Ages? Where does it all start? And if you start it from where it is, you see a progression. And to me, that progression shows us that God is moving with his people and manifesting himself where they are. 30 years ago, we never had internet. We then had it 10 years or so later. Then 5 years ago, we had COVID. Then we all rushed and started using internet for evangelism, for worship, for all the other things. So we evolved. We didn't have digital Bibles. Now we have digital Bibles. And God is speaking to us through the same digital Bibles that 30 years ago were not there. So when people then say old-time religion, I think to some extent, my problem with that is it exposes this nostalgia over the past. There are people who see the past as the best representation of faithfulness to God. And they look at the present with apostasy. They look at what's happening. They say, God is not here. God is in the past. So we need to do the way things they did in the past so that we get that God that they had. So they will dress like in the past. They will sing like in the past. They will walk like in the past. As if all those rituals and actions will bring God into the present, only to be disappointed. And I think that's where mission then struggles, where we are still trying to replay the past, which we have made an indicator of faithfulness, and we talk about the old-time religion. And at the end of the day, we find ourselves speaking to no one. No one is listening. No one understands our language, because we are still trying to bring the past into a world whose conditions are different. So old-time religion, I believe in it, but one thing I celebrate about it is it brought with it an element of progression, moving, rather than being stuck at some point in time in history. So, yeah, if you ask the same people about old-time religion and ask them, what is it all about? You find that they have all different reference points. You say old-time religion is when you grew up. Someone will say old-time religion, faith of our fathers, is Martin Luther. Someone will say, no, old-time religion is our pioneers. If you would ask our pioneers, what is old-time religion for them? They will tell you something else. So there's an element of progression, and what we need to be celebrating is not our faithfulness to the past, but our relevance to the present.
Not our faithfulness to the past, but our relevance to the present. So I guess this question, are we relevant to the present? But then, look, with so many of your posts, you highlight so many things, the way we tend to misinterpret scripture sometimes, you always bring up a lot of arguments. But now, I always wonder, is there anything that you think we are doing right as a church in today's age?
No, there are elements that we are doing right. But I want you to appreciate something, Marvin. Whenever I post what I post, I post in different ways. I use different styles of presenting something simple in form of a question, something in form of humor, something sarcastic. I'm trying to trigger conversation where we have to sit down and confront some of the questions that we have. I have a global audience. I talk to people in different parts of the world who sometimes resonate with what I do, or sometimes have problems with it. But for me, my greatest celebration is we are talking about these things. You know, I don't want to come out there and say, I have the answers. I'm the one who is supposed to be telling you what to do. But I'm saying, if you look at the way we are doing church today, it's so congested. Walk in at 9 o'clock, you walk out at 5 o'clock. There's no time for you to ask your questions. The questions are determined. The topics are determined. Information comes one way. You are just receiving it. So if you have any problems, you just have to see where you fit in the agenda, or wait for your agenda to come through one day in those 52 weeks. So it's not really that I'm criticizing anyone, but I'm triggering conversations that will help us as Christians to reflect and ask ourselves, are we responsive? Are we relevant? Look at the state of the church today. In urban areas especially, where I spend most of my time, mission is not growing. We are struggling to baptize. We end up going to rural areas or poor communities to be able to get baptisms. You know, We are struggling. You know, people are no longer coming to church as they used to. Today they come, next week they don't come. So there's these changes that are happening. And until we ask ourselves candid questions, not questions around how we do church only, but questions on how we read the Bible itself and interpret it to ourselves and to others. So there's a mix of certain things that we need to look at candidly. If somebody looks at it as criticism, then that's unfair, I think, because you are deflecting it to me as the messenger whilst you are hiding away or shying away from confronting some of these issues. So all I want to say is I believe in Adventism. I believe in our story as Adventism, right? It's the most convincing story around the plan of salvation and the end of things. Are there questions? Yes, there are. Are these questions up for debate? For some people, it's no. For others, it's no. Let's look at it. So don't look at it as criticism. Looking at it as exploring part of the journey of faith where we have conversations around some difficult topics, things that we have taken for granted so that we can find meaning. I'm a father of a teenager. I'm confronted with questions and I have to be candid and say, my son, I don't know. My son, this I'm not sure. Oh, I understand, you see. So yeah, there are so many positives. But I'm worried at where we are right now. I'm worried, and I think that's the essence of where I'm coming from. Mm.
But now, if you talk about, you highlighted the issue of maybe we are not baptizing as we used to, or as we are supposed to, or we are not doing things the way we are supposed to, or maybe people are not pitching up at church the way they used to. But now, the argument will always be, the Bible says, so shall it be. In the last days, the hearts of many shall grow cold. And it seems like the Bible paints a picture whereby, you know, people will not respond to the word, will not be as responsive to the word as they used to be in the first days. And someone will tell you that, well, let it be like that. Let them grow together, the tares and the wheat, and we'll see it in a harvest. All we need to do is just do what we have to do. What do you say about that?
That's apathetic. That's a coward approach to doing things. If you are a parent, or if you are a brother or a sister, you have a sibling who you know is taking the wrong course, are you going to say it's because it's the last days, I'll let them do what they do? Ah, it's the last days, I'll let them be what they be, what they are. But you exert every effort to seek that which is lost. You leave no stone unturned. Sometimes you have to adjust and adapt your methods to be able to reach out to that person because you love them and you see them taking a wrong course. So I think as representatives of Jesus on earth, we should not be giving up on people, but we should be saying, Lord, how else and how best can we get to people? Rather than being satisfied by them marching into destruction, we ask ourselves, how best do we get them? Because we've been brought into this world not to create islands of faithful followers or of the righteous, but to be sold, to go into uncomfortable places so that we can make an impact. So I don't really believe in using that statement as a way of saying, so let it burn down. Let's wait for it. Well, in any case, it's going to implode. Why are we building a house? Why are you going to school? Why are you improving yourself if you knew that the world is ending? Then translate that to somebody's decision to follow Christ. So we need to make it make it possible for people to fall in love with Jesus. Make it easier for them to see Jesus. Ask them, why are you not coming? Why is it there's little interest? What's really happening? So if we ask ourselves those questions, then things will move. Recently, Malvin, our church leaders, they launched a strategy, I will go. Ambitious. Mm-hmm. You know, 2025 to 2030, it's ambitious. It shows intention that, look, conditions have changed. We need to be more aggressive. We need to be more deliberate. So within the church itself, there is this enthusiasm that, guys, even though things are burning down, we really need to be more aggressive because that is our call as Christians. We can never hide behind not being heard or not being listened to. So that's how I really see it.
Mm. So I'm thinking, man, how then do we become relevant to people in this day and age what could be one or two suggestions that you think we should take and we implement such strategies so that we become effective in today's world? Okay, we are saying some of our ways that we used to embrace and or the way we used to do things could be outdated. So what are the new versions of doing things that you think we should embrace as a movement?
Hey, there are so many ways. This would be a whole afternoon discussion. But I'll point to two things. If you look at Africa, 70-80% of Africans, the population, are below the age of 35. Those are young people. You go with that demographic into our churches, you ask ourselves, where are our young people? You are going to notice that our young people are reduced to passive spectators. They only wear uniforms and recite stuff in front of adults, and we call it youth participation. So essentially, they're excluded in the very church where they are a majority. Then how do you expect to impact them when you have old men like me probably and you, I don't know. Dinosaurs, I usually joke. Dinosaurs and ancestors still running the show, trying to be relevant, and we impose upon them answers, content that probably they don't resonate with. You know, we have not really been intentional in terms of getting our young people involved, because they are now not the future of the church, the present. You know, we're in the spaces where I work, we talk about Africa's demographic dividend. In other words, we are saying Africa is a large population. Youthful population, which needs to be harnessed now, not in the future, now. So how are these young people reaching out to their peers? Are we equipping them? Are we giving them not just ideas, but even resources, financing them so that they come up with projects and activities that they can be active also in mission in the church that they belong to? That's number one. Number two, we have a church culture that we have adopted, where for 52 weeks, you can go into a church and just be listening to good sermons, good music, just like that. Somebody has to bring in a powerful speaker from somewhere and good music. There's a poster that you get on Friday. So you can just sit in there and absorb the moment. You know, you're just a passive spectator. Church has ceased to be a community. It's like a club, a show, an event where you go consume a product, then you go back home. So the element of community where people are cared for is dying, because I don't care about the person sitting next to me. All I'm worried is what's happening on stage, or who is the powerful person, and what am I going to get? So in a sense, you know, as we move towards these elements that are borrowed from other churches, where you have more of a consumer, program-centric, event-driven, church-building-centered kind of arrangement, you are simply undoing the revival that you are seeking. You're simply undoing. When you congest people that way and you allow them to be more passive than anything else, you're simply making it difficult for them to fall in love with Jesus and with one another, because you are saying, they need to get us more information, much information, much information, much information, so them to be transformed, forgetting that they have access to information every day of their lives these days through internet. They have more content on their fingertips. So it's not the absence of content that they are coming to church, Marvin. People are coming to church because they are looking for family. They are looking to belong. They are looking for a place where they will be embraced and be told, it's okay, my child. It's okay. Keep going. Yes, you messed up. Keep going. Come, let's pray together about your issue. But we don't have that in our churches. It's congested. So those are the two areas that I would touch with. Involvement of young people and the church culture, the way we are doing church, which simply is doing away with the things that we want to build in the people who are coming.
You touch a lot on that aspect, especially this church culture. Like if I quote one of your post that you made on September 13, you said, where is that normal church with no fancy posters, guest musicians, or celebrity preacher? Just real people exchanging, laughing, encouraging, and boring each other like family. Okay. All right. So you are saying that we are now having this celebrity culture, flyers. I'm sure every Friday you see 5-10 flyers on your timeline, especially if you're scrolling through social media, you are seeing so many flyers. So to you, you feel like, no, that's not how we're supposed to be doing it. Well, they might bring an argument and tell you that, look, a flyer is just about letting people know what's coming ahead. It's not like we are celebrating somebody per se.
Okay. No, that's a good point. I was talking to a friend just recently around the same subject, and I was saying, you find that much of the emphasis is on the face, Admiral's face on the poster. So if somebody sees Admiral, then they'll be like, ah, I know Admiral, that guy on Facebook, that guy on whatever, so I'm going, right? So Admiral is the bait. What people expect to get in terms of the topics, the content is rarely mentioned. So we are saying, it's what you see when Michael Jackson would come to town, or where some pop star is coming to do an event. So it's really the face behind that is meant to lure people. So at the end of the day, what that culture simply kills, it then creates, puts more attention on the person, you know. And if you've got five or so, 5-10 posters on your timeline that have got all these big name, I call them big name speakers or big name musicians on your timeline, you are spoiled for choice. You are tempted in the morning to be somewhere else, in the afternoon to be somewhere else, and evening to be somewhere else, right? So you're just now chasing church events and getting as much as you can, right? And in that same setup, there's no element where one day they will say, today we're going to hear Malvin speaking to us. Then Malvin stands up and shares his testimony of how God used him to impact his neighbor. Sit in your church, ask for testimonies. How did the Lord use you to reach out to a neighbor? You find almost none. If testimonies come up, they are from 1952, right? Because we don't have spaces. We are not equipped to engage. We are only equipped to absorb information, to listen, to focus so much on getting a certain experience outside church, you know. And all I'm saying that it's harmful. I would wish that as much as we have special days where we have all these things happening, but our focus is more on that community. You know, I've been to churches where you get there, you know, the sermon is not even as outstanding, you know, but it's smiles around you, you know, meeting Brother Malvin, Brother Sister Spiwe, so and so, just talking and laughing, having lunch together. And you'll be like, yeah, that was family, you know. So people should miss church, I believe. Not so much of the content, because the content can disappoint. You can go there and it's not as, but you still go there because there's much more than what you're going for. It's not so much about what you get, you know. So I'm really advocating for that kind of a church where community is, people are at the center rather than the stage. The stage has taken over now. We put so much emphasis on what happens on stage. We put so much decor, so much structure, so much ritual, so much in whatever it is, on what's happening in front, and we forget the people who are in the room. You know, it's easy for you to go into an Adventist church and go out without praying for yourself because there's so much happening. It's easy for you to go into a typical church and you find that you sit there and you don't even have time to know the person seated next to you. There's so much happening. You know the person who's in front, but not the person next to you. And is that church? Is that what would keep people in church? Because if tomorrow that celebrity preacher is not there, or that big name preacher is not there, I'll move on to the next church where it's there. I'm a consumer. If you're not there, I'll go on to the next room. If it dies, I'll go into the next room. So our young people are also taking that mentality where they go around shopping for church experience. We've lost that pattern of saying, yes, in a family, there are boring days, but because it's family, we stay there.
Well, I'm thinking, yes, because I think I'm getting a bit of clarity here. Because, look, there are days when you'd go to church and the one thing that would excite you is to teach the Sabbath school class or teach the kids in the kindergarten class. That would not only enrich the kids, but it would also enrich you because participation has got a way of uplifting you as a Christian. I think I observed that in church because usually if you just sit in church, it's easy for you to get bored, or should we say, without movement, it's easy for you to get cold. But now, if you just sit there consuming, and I'm thinking, even the groups and the preachers become less, impactful to you, because back then, we used to have a time when we would have, guest day once every quarter. That's when we would invite a group from outside, and they would come and sing, and it would be a spectacular day. You would really feel that this is a guest day. But now if you're consuming the same music from the same groups and same preachers every day, hey, I think it's getting you're getting too used to it.
I think it's a tragedy. I understand our leaders are really trying to get people still coming and interested in church, but I think we're using the wrong tools and the wrong approach that will undo what we want to get at. That's my only worry. That, on the surface, you'll be happy to have a room of 100 people. But on a normal day when it's Admiral who's going to preach, you're going to have 40 people. Then that's dangerous. That's unhealthy, you know. That's unhealthy. You have created a bunch of consumers who are just in there to get something. If it's not there, then they don't come, you know. What's keeping them going is the content, not necessarily the community, the belonging. They are not co-creators of a church experience. Like what you said, you teach kindergarten. You are co-creating a church experience for those kids, you know. That element on its own empowers you. It reflects back on you. You know, you feel you are part of a family, you know. So that is what made you identify. But now we are all competing now for the same audience, so we are using the same methods. So at the end, someone will say, so does it matter if I go to church if all the products are the same, if it's the same speakers, the same big names, or the same big groups that we are all circulating or rotating? Does it matter if I don't get them there, I'll get them the other day? So it's interesting times. It's interesting times.
All right, so hopefully we get a bit of warmth in that family, because these days, I guess, it's even very normal for you to walk into a church and walk out without anyone even greeting you, except for the traditional, let's just greet our visitors announcement that is usually done on the pulpit. It's very, very normal. I don't know about you, but where I worship, it's very normal to walk into a church without anybody even bothering to say hi. So, of course, time is getting jealous. You did mention about time, and I'm realizing this guy was saying the truth. So, what do you want to say? What would be your last words? Because I think I'm going to need you to come back. I've got a number of topics that I would have wanted to chew on with you here, but it's just that time is getting jealous. What would be your parting shot? Having said what you say, especially to do with the church community, you know, that warmth, that getting to church and you feel uplifted and you walk back and you feel like, oh no, you know what, I've had a beautiful, beautiful Sabbath. What do you want to say to all the worshippers out there who are probably listening to you and they're relating to the things that you're talking about?
I think my starting point is, I think for those who are in leadership positions, that when people are coming to church, they are looking for much more than what they can get online. There's so much content, powerful speakers, music, etc. that people can get online. There are so many options. So we don't have a scarcity problem. You know, it's not like we are running dry. We don't have any options. That was in the past. These days, we have a problem of abundance. And abundance is not even satisfying us. We still feel hungry. Our souls are longing for family. Some of us are staying where we can't even have spaces where we can pray, you know. And we long for church to be that place that gives us that space where we are prayed for and we pray even for ourselves. So we are looking for a family. We are staying alone. I moved to Harare. I have no one else. Church is my family. but the elder doesn't even know me or doesn't even bother to even check on me to say, how are you? You know? So this industrial mode where the elder becomes the MC, the deacon becomes the cleanup crew, the pastor is as a chair of a committee that discusses things like decor, all that, it's just so industrial and less intimate. We need to show people that when they come into church, they matter. Each and every one of them is valued. And it starts in the small things. We need to be intentional by making sure that people are not just a number that we stand up, we sing for them, and that's it. We need to slow down. Slow down, trim down excess fat. And for those who are grappling whether to come to church or not to come to church, or does it matter or it doesn't, I would say, keep going. Church may not be perfect. You are going to be sinned against. You are going to be offended by Malvin. But keep going. That's what family is all about. That's the beauty of worshiping God. We forgive each other and we move on. You need to be part of a family. There are wolves out there. And being online being online is not being part of a family. Yeah, you're just a viewer. You're just like my child who's watching Blaze and the Monster Machine. You need to be part of a community to co-create, to be active. You know, to say something, to build someone, to say hello, to smile to someone. We all need that family because that's what keeps us going. Christianity is dying in Europe today. And one of the things that they've observed is there are mental health issues that are happening in that part of the world. People have become less communal, more isolated, and they don't see it mattering so much to go to church. So we can do it differently because we're Africans, we're communal, and I would say, let's get back to church and make church work because we are the church. It's not the building. It's not the structures. It's not the facilities. It's me and you who make the church experience what it is.
It is me and you who make the church experience what it is. So let's go back to that church whereby you feel warm. You feel like you're part of a family. And that's beautiful. That is very, very, very beautiful right there, and well put. And in case you're wondering who I was talking to, this is my elder Admiral Nube. He's been giving us a bit of pointers. Of course, we've decided to take him from the social media to come to radio so that he can explain further some of the nuggets that he's always sharing. So, which leads me to thank you, my elder, for coming through to the Weekend Chapter right here on Adventist World Radio SID.
You are tuned into Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.